Okay, so welcome again to continue the electronics part B. So we continue with the chapter 19, which is about the we'll put that away about the bipolar junction transistors. So the previous chapter was field effect transistors, and now we are talking about bipolar devices, where the main idea and main difference from the field effect transistor is that now we are talking about current controlled device. So we now have the input signal for to these transistors is practically a current. So obviously we apply a voltage, but that voltage induces a current in the base terminal, which then in turn turns into a collector current, and there is this in the transfer characteristics, so to speak, is that there is this current gain, which is device dependent. So each device has different current gain, but essentially it's linearly proportional. The output current, which is the output current, is now considered as the collector current. The output current is linearly dependent on the input current, which is the base current. And here's the given the relationship that we are talking about this current gain, as usually it's given as beta, or moreover is in data sheets it's given is this kind of H parameter, HFE. So but beta is very commonly used as the to co kind of describe the current gain. And for DC current or DC signals, the definition is that it's simply the collector current divided by the base current. And it's not even in this, it's not even the kind of relative change of collector current versus the change in the base current, but it's actually the value of the current. So if you have base current is let's say 100 microamps, and we have a beta of 100, then we have 10 milliamps of collector current. So it's simply like that. So this is useful and thing that to keep in mind when you start analyzing the circuits where you have these bipolar transistors. So you can use this, and you need to use this information when dealing with different currents in the different parts of that circuit, the DC part of the current. So when we are dealing with the operation point and the bias point of the circuit, this is what to use. Then for the AC current gain, there is a fine distinction between these two, although many times we use the same value. So this capital HFE, so the DC current gain, is many times it's the same value as the AC current gain. So this small letters HFE, which in turn is defined by the change, so the small signal collector current and the small versus the small signal base current. So now this small letter I here refers to the change and the small signal, so the small amplitude AC signal that we have on top of the DC level, the same way that we had in the MOSFET descriptions that we were going through. So there is a fine distinction. If you go to the fine details of the analysis, in some cases when you go higher frequencies, depending on the transistor, there might be a slight difference of the DC current gain and the AC current gain. But for us, we don't make the distinction at this. So for example, if you do an LTSPICE simulation with the NPN transistor or PNP transistor, and you take the operational point, like you simulate it, and it will give you the current gains. It will list you the DC current gain and the AC current gain of that transistor. And what is different usually is that what makes it different, these two, is that internally the transistor, we have this small signal model that we will come into the next slides. There are some capacitances between the base and collector, and base to the emitter and collector to the emitter, and so on. And when you go higher and higher frequency, those capacitances start play a role, and then they will reduce the current gain at high frequencies in respect to the DC current gain. So those are the fine distinctions, or it might change. It might be even higher in some cases, depending on the structure of the device itself. But that is something that we don't need to worry about in this. It's those fine details and kind of more advanced analysis, that it's just good to know that these two are somewhat different. Then the transconductance, that was the same that or similar that what we had for the MOSFET or the field effect transistors. It's again, it's it transconductance, it determines or defines the transfer function in terms of that we have the input is voltage, so the VBE, so base to emitter voltage, and what is the corresponding collector current, and namely the change in the collector current versus the change in the base to emitter voltage. And if you go through, basically we have the base emitter junction is a PN junction, so we can use for that, we can simply use this diode equation that we learned in the first few chapters in this course. And then we have this beta value that basically just multiplies that diode current into the collector current. And if we now take that PN junction, and basically this transconductance is the slope at any given point on that exponential curve. And if we take the derivation of that, so differentiate that, and what we comes out is that there's this term E over KT times the diode function. And this 1/kT value is actually at room temperature it's about 40. So that's where this comes from. So basically we get the transconductance is approximately at room temperature is 40 times the value of the bias point. And moreover, the collector current in the bias point is roughly the same as the emitter current at that bias point as well, because you remember that if we have the beta value, if that is, let's say it's 100, so then 1 unit of base current gives you 100 units of collector current, and the emitter current is 101 units of current, because emitter current is the sum of base and collector. So if the beta is, and usually these quite high numbers, or 100, 200, or something like that, then we can estimate that the collector current is roughly the same as the emitter current. So there might be this 1% or 0.5% difference depending on what is the beta. So that's why we can estimate this here. So, and the units for GM is basically of admittance, so it's 1/1/1 resistance, because it's current divided by voltage. So that's but it's as said, it's the base to emitter voltage, or the collector current divided by or the change in the collector current divided by the change in the base to emitter voltage at any given point on that curve. So that where it comes from. So all in all, we can get from this transconductance, this 1 over GM is then in turn, it's termed as the emitter resistance. So the system sees that the transistor and the emitter resistance, so from there. So now we know for the small signal model, we can use this 1 over GM value as the emitter resistance. We will look into that in closely that where that actually is in the circuit in a minute. So the same way that what we had for the MOSFET, we can build a simple equivalent circuit. So again, we have a nonlinear system or nonlinear device to handle in our circuit. But of course, if we would like to analyze it, it's quite complicated to start analyzing it in a simple way when we have this exponential function there, and then when we add resistors and we start adding and building these Kirchhoff laws in different parts of the circuit, and then we at one point we have this exponential behavior. So of course that would be quite painful to analyze. But what comes out is that if we consider that our signal that we are now looking at is a small signal, so we have a small amplitude signal that is amplified to something else at the output of our amplifier, then we can again make the estimation that okay, we take this exponential function, we take one point there at some point, that's our biasing point, and we take a small area or small range close to that point and consider that as a linear slope. And that's where it comes from, this equivalent circuit for that. And we can basically make this small signal model for bipolar transistors, and we have different equivalent components, linear components describing this model. So here we have, let's see what's the difference between these two. Okay, so these are the most simple ones how to describe a bipolar transistor, the small signal model for bipolar transistor. So we have at the input, we have from base to emitter, we have this, the input signal, we can consider it as the base emitter voltage or the base current. So you can deal it with any either way, because they are basically connected together. And then we have this input resistor, which is determined by the diode equation that determines the current to voltage behavior of the PN junction. So we have this base to emitter PN junction, and this, so again, we take a small portion of that and we consider that as linear behavior, not taking the full nonlinear exponential function, because that would be a complex to analyze. And then we simplify it so that we have this HFE value that is given for that given transistor. So it's the beta value that multiplies this beta, this base current here. So from the collector, there is just simply a higher current flowing here than here, 100 times, 150 times, or 200 times, depending on the device. And then we have the output resistor, which is depends on this the transistor, the collector, and the emitter resistances there. But also we can consider this this so the top graph is when we deal or consider the input signal as the current. So in base current as input, we have base current here multiplied by this HFE. But also we could consider this as voltage as an input, so this VPE as input signal, and then we use this transconductance as a multiplier. So basically this GM VPE here is equal to HFE times IB. So either way we use, they should compare. So it depends on which way is easier for the rest of the circuit to use in the analysis. And what do you know? Do you have information about HFE or do you have the information of GM? So that is both are equal. So as always, there are limitations in these models, so they are not perfect. So of course, one thing, obvious thing is that when we have, if we have the amplitude of the input signal is no longer, so where is the limit when we can consider a signal as a small signal? So that's always a kind of a question that to make, that where it kind of, where the area or the range in the voltage or this current is no longer behaving as a linear, so it's not linearly proportional anymore. So where is the limit? So that's one thing. But also one thing is, which is given here, is that the output voltage itself, so the biasing point, so the collector to emitter current or the collector to emitter voltage, if we increase that for any reason, then it kind of affects the base to emitter PN junction behavior as well. So if we increase the VCE, then it requires more and more base to emitter voltage in order to get the same current. So we kind of move the threshold to higher voltages. And this can be modeled by the reverse transfer ratio as this H. So this H parameters can be used to model the more we have these parameters, more accurate the model is. But of course, then it gets more and more complicated. So it's kind of a balance that how much parameters you want to add. We are still talking about linear model, but then of course, when we have more and more of these parameters, it gets a little bit more complicated, even though it's linear, but it's still more equations to solve and more terms in the equations. So more accurate, this hybrid parameter model. So we have this H parameters. So this is kind of the more accurate that the model that from the previous. So now we have the same H. So H IAE. So that's the input resistance. Then we have this amplifier here, or the current source that is where we have this amplification term. Then we have the output resistance or the output admittance, whichever way you want to solve it or consider it. Then we have this reverse part here. So this basically just takes into account the effect of the output voltage. So the VCE voltage, there's some term that this HRE, that basically what it does, that if the HRE is high, larger number, then more and more of the output voltage is kind of fed back, and it limits the input current. So, and it limits the voltage gain of this system. But usually this HRE, we can kind of, in the simplest case, we can just let it be and not to worry, not to worry about that. So it's close to zero. But it depends on how accurately you want to analyze and model your system. So in this system, these different parameters are what they mean. So this HIE is the input impedance. So it's given as in units of ohms. And this HOE is output admittance. So if you look at here, we can model it as 1 over HOE, so as a resistor, but 1 over HOE, so the HOE unit should be 1 over ohm, so that is in Siemens. And then these forward current gain and reverse voltage ratio are unitless values or unitless parameters, so they're just the number. So HFE is the most critical or most important value. So in the simplest model, this is the only thing you need, this HFE. And you can kind of consider HRE as zero and HOE as zero as well. So it makes the output resistance infinite. And then IE as zero, so you don't have any input impedance. But in real case, every one of these have some finite value. Then going more and more accurate in the modeling, then we need to add, like, going into the frequency response, as I already mentioned, to a certain extent, that we have this p-n junction. So we have p-n junction between base and emitter. We have p-n junction between collector and base. And then we have this NPN kind of a sandwich structure from collector to emitter. All of these, they have a certain capacitance. So depending on what is the size, what are the doping levels, and also what is the voltage, so what are the depletion region levels, like thicknesses, everything affects. But anyhow, we have certain capacitors or capacitances that we can add to the model in order to make it more and more precise when we deal with high frequencies. So what we have here is the most effective ones is the base to emitter junction. We have a certain resistance to describe that junction, but also we have the certain capacitance to describe it. Then we have from base to collector, we have a certain capacitance and we have a certain resistance as well. So there is some current capable of flowing through there. And then we have this RBP prime, and then we have RCE, which are similar to what we had in the previous model. So now we could use this type of model and get parameters for all these in order to model the high frequency behavior. And here what we have is that, for example, this RBD prime E, this resistor value is basically this emitter resistance multiplied by the current gain. Now we are always talking about the small signal model parameters. And you remember that this RE was 1 over transconductance, and the transconductance was given roughly as 40 times emitter current, so the DC point of the emitter current. So if we know the biasing point and we know about the transistor current gain value, so how much, what is the relationship between the base and collector current, we can get this value from there. So it's not something that you just invent, but you it's connected to those parameters and those characteristics of the transistor. And if you would like to go back and try to find what is the relationship between this hybrid pi model in and the hybrid parameter model, which was in the previous case, is that we can consider that what is the input resistance, so total resistance looking into the base. So if one would look into the base and try to figure out what is the total resistance of that the input resistance, then it's basically it's this RPP prime plus RP prime E, so these two here. So that would be the HIE. And then if you just plug in that what we just learned is that we get this type of relationship. And moreover, if we now get kind of some approximate values for a real device, so if the HFE is about 200, which is quite normal value for the current gain, our biasing point is the operating point is 5 milliamps for the emitter current, which then gives, using this value, it gives us roughly 1 kilo ohm for this term. And this RBB prime, which is the prime is missing here, but that part is in the order of some ohms. So some ohms to some tens of ohms. So then you know notice that this term here is dominating this input resistance. So we could approximate that the input resistance of this is simply this RBE term. So in the order of kilo ohm or so, plus minus something. So as we discussed earlier in part A, so as we go higher and higher in frequency, then of course these capacitances start to play a more and more role. So as always, as we discussed in length, that at higher frequencies, all amplifiers, they will lose gain eventually. There might be some resonance points before we hit the that region when it goes this 20 decibels per decade or higher, depending on what type of amplifier. So is it first order or second order filtering that we are applying to it? But anyhow, it's always that you will find at some point at going at higher frequencies that the amplification will attenuate. So this base to emitter capacitance is one thing that will make it the amplification lower. And then we have the base to collector, which also affects the because of the feedback. Because we have that will make a feedback from the output to the input, and obviously that will make some effect. And because the device is inverting amplifier, so when the input is going up, the output is going down. So we have this is always an inverting amplifier setup. So, because then this CB capacitor is fed back from the output to the input, we are talking about negative feedback. So the impedance of the capacitor decreases as frequency increases. which means that the amount of the negative feedback increases with frequency. And you remember that we have this we have had this negative feedback kind of generally what was the negative feedback, this A over 1 plus AB equation. So now we have this B value was the feedback term, and if we increase that term, the value of that term, we are not going into the details how to get that B or the A for this particular device, but just the idea that okay, we have this negative feedback, and when the negative feedback is increased at high frequencies, we will start reducing the gain because of that. So that's the basic principle, like hand waving explanation why that happens. We are not going into the full details that okay, where the current's flowing and car voltages and so on, because that would be a little bit too much for this type of course. But it's good to know something that of course if you are interested, you can make simulations and play around with them and see how it works. But for this course, it's enough that you get some kind of idea where that decrease in gain comes from. So the combined effect of these two capacitors, it comes this kind of low pass filter behavior. So we have this HFE at the in this band pass, which is basically just the transconductance that gives you that. And then when we go to higher frequencies, then these capacitors start to play a role, and we have this reduction in the gain. And similarly to all the previous filters and amplifier circuits that we have been dealing with, we have this minus 3 decibel point, which is this 0.07 multiplier, and that at a certain frequency, which depends on the time constants that are determined by the resistors and the capacitors in the circuit. So the bandwidth is given by this F beta, which again, as you can imagine, it's dependent on the device. So all the current gains, the transconductances, the size of the device, the thickness of the device, and all those things affect this value. So if you look at the equivalent circuit, the model, it's basically this cutoff frequency is now when we are dealing with in hertz, we have this 2 pi value here. So we have this 1 over RC. So R is now the base emitter resistor times the CBE and CBC capacitors together. And moreover, we can see that the CBE capacitor is dominating over the CBC, so we can even estimate or approximate this cutoff just using the CBE capacitor. And then we have this so-called transition frequency. So basically that is kind of related to this unity gain bandwidth, that when this we which were we were talking about this unity gain bandwidth when we were dealing with the operational amplifiers, and so that's when that at that frequency we have unity gain for that amplifier, in this case for the transistor. So same way that we have had there is that if we consider the that we have this certain band pass gain, And then we know about this cutoff frequency. Then we can see that because it goes, the slope is 20 decibels per decade, so it goes from here to here, same ratio that this, because we have a log-log scale. So it's simply from this frequency times this, it gives you this frequency. So you can find out where that is if you know this value. And basically you know the biasing point, so this emitter current. This is given usually in the data sheet, or you know it from the transistor. Otherwise, the CPEs might be a little bit difficult to find. Sometimes it's given in the data sheet, but anyhow, or it could be that it's in the data sheet, it's given directly this FB of a FB beta value. But then you can simply get this FD if you know this and this current gain value. So it's rather simple to get one from the other. But all in all, the bandwidth and the transition frequency, what the take from here is that they are more both proportional to this biasing point. So this IE here, the capital I, means that is the current that is flowing through the resistor, basically. So the higher the current, the higher the bandwidth. But of course, if you put higher current there, then you have more power. So there's a compromise that if you want to make a low power consumption and high bandwidth amplifier, then with this you have to give in from one or the other. If you want to have low power, so you put low current, then you are reducing the bandwidth, and vice versa. So this is something to remember and note from here. Okay, let's go and analyze now. And use what we've just learned. Analyze a simple amplifier. So we have had similar things already, but now we look at starting from the actual circuit. No, so now we have an AC coupled amplifier. So meaning that AC couple is that we are using this capacitor over here to just take the AC part of the input signal into the amplifier. And that's basically all. So we are now dealing with the frequencies that are high enough that this capacitor, impedance of this capacitor can be neglected. And then we have it at the base, we have this RB resistor, which basically means that we take this from the supply VCC, which is a DC voltage. We are biasing this PN junction at the right point, so in the operating point. Then on the collector side, we have this RC, which makes the output voltage then, because we have a certain voltage or certain current flowing from the collector through the transistor. There's a certain voltage drop that then determines the DC point, the operating point for the output. And also when we have this AC signal then fluctuating on the base side, we have the current, the base current is fluctuating, then we have this beta value that, or the HFE value that makes the transition from base current to the collector current. We have some collector current and then it's fluctuating. Then we have the output voltage that is fluctuating in the same manner. So the frequency remains the same. Only thing is that we have inverting amplifiers. So when this current goes up, the collector current goes up, but that means that the collector voltage goes down. because of the voltage drop in the RC. So that's this is an inverting configuration. So we can separate the analysis into two parts, the same way that we did for the MOSFETs or the field effect transistor analysis. So we have the DC or the quiescent behavior, and then we have the AC, which is small signal behavior. So let's start with the DC analysis first. So we now need to find out where, what are the operating points for this circuit. So now it's given that the HFE, the DC current gain is 100. So base current is multiplied by 100 to get the collector current. That's all that there is to from there. Then it's given that the RB resistor is 910 kilo ohm and the collector resistor is 4.7 kilo. The supply voltage is 10 volts. And we have this VPE over here, which is typically we can consider that as 0.7 volts. If we are not, if we don't have a knowledge on the actual IV characteristics, so we can consider that it's a silicon diode. And as you remember from the diode chapter, this we can. You can estimate and use kind of this simplest case for that, for the diode, and we have the 0.7 volt threshold voltage that dictates this PN junction behavior. So if it's not given, then you can estimate it as 0.7 volts. And then if you look at from the base emitter junction, so if you now go from here, from 10 volts, looking at what's the current flowing, so the base current flows from here. It cannot go through the capacitor because we are dealing with DC current. So DC current cannot flow through the capacitor. So it goes through this PE junction and goes to zero. So that's the flow of the current from here. And the base current kind of joins with the collector current to the emitter. So at the emitter, we have both the collector and base current flowing. So, and on the collector side, we can do similarly that we have collector current that is flowing through the RC. Then we have a certain VCE, so collector emitter voltage that is dictated by the current, IC current, the RC resistor and the VCC voltage. So now we will check where we are for both. So simply from the base side, the collector, the base current is VCC minus VBE divided by RB. So from there we have an estimate, or quite good estimate, that the base current is 10.2 microamps. And then it was given that the current gain for this transistor is 100. So the collector current is simply 100 times 10 kiloamps. So it's 1.02 milliamps. So now we know the base current, we know the collector current. And now we can go to the collector side and calculate what is the operating point for the output voltage. So what is the DC point for the output voltage? So that is simply, again, VCC minus RC times IC. So there's the voltage drop in this collector resistor that drops the output voltage. So the collector voltage is reduced from VCC by the factor of 4.7 kilo ohm times 1.02 milliamps. So what we get is that the output voltage has a DC component of 5.2 volts. So now we have the operating point, collector current 1 milliamp and output voltage roughly 5 volts. Okay, then we determine the small signal behavior. So we need to construct first the small signal equivalent circuit for this amplifier. So we have the transistor. So we take the simplest case for that. We at the moment we don't take into account all the capacitors and so on. So we take this the simplest H parameter model for it. So we have this GM transconductance here, this output resistor and input resistor. And now one thing to note, it's the same way that for the field effect transistors when we were building the small signal models, is that now we have this RB here is connected between the base and emitter, whereas it was connected in the DC model or the kind of this model, it was from the base to the supply. But this is something that you need to learn and need to kind of understand if you are not already familiar with, that when we are dealing with the AC signal, the small signal, then from the AC point of view, the DC is effectively the same as ground. So it doesn't matter whether you have 10 volts, which is stable, it doesn't change at all, or you have 0 volt, they are equal from the AC, in the AC world or in the AC analysis. So that's why for the small signal model, what we can do is that we take this 10 volt DC current, the DC voltage source, and we hook it up with this zero. Because from the AC point of view, it doesn't matter is it 10 volts or 0 volts or 5 volts or whatever, it's stable and it doesn't change. So we're now looking at, in the small signal model, we are only looking at the changes in the signals and not the actual levels where they are, at which point they are changing at. So that's why we take this RB on this side, we take it from here and we plug it, turn it in here. The same goes with the RC. We take it from here, and on the collector emitter side, we take the RC, and it's connected from the collector to emitter, like given here. So now we have the small signal model, and we now can analyze this. So there's practically nothing else needed in the simplest case. Okay, so if we ignore the effects of the capacitors, the input, so the coupling capacitor that is at the input, we can consider that the input signal is the same as, or the VP signal is the same as our input signal. Okay, that is given. Then on the output side, if you look at there, we can again get quite simple analysis. So if we consider what is the output voltage here, we have the current source that is flowing from the collector to the emitter. So now we have a current that is flowing here. Then we just simply know that we have this 1 over HOE and RC in parallel. So we have a parallel configuration of two resistors practically. So this current that is flowing here, it flows from through these resistors from bottom to top. So from this emitter to the collector, effectively. So the output, the small signal output voltage is then minus GMVBE times this parallel of these two resistors, like given here. And because VPE is now considered as the same as the input, we get this behavior, which then we can turn into a transfer function that we have this minus GM and then this 1 over HOE parallel with RC. And we can then, if we open this, it gets into this type of thing. And moreover, usually this 1 over HOE, so the output resistance of the transistor is much greater than what we use for. So in this case, we had this 4.7 kilo ohm for RC. So HOE can be in the order of at least tens of kilo ohms, maybe 100 kilo ohm or more. So we can consider that this 1 over HOE is much greater. So it means that this the transfer function for the output voltage or the voltage gain of this circuit is simply the transconduct minus transconductance times the RC. And you remember this transconductance was 1 over the emitter resistance. So this GM or this small letter RE is now the transistor. It's dependent on the transistor. But this RC is something that you can control when you build this circuit. So this is how this common emitter amplifier works. So there are some similarities to what you had in the field effect transistors. There was also the transconductance. It was also inverting. There was the transconductance, and then you had this RD, which was the drain resistor. But it was basically, if you consider that picture and the picture for the bipolar transistor, they have a lot in common. Then let's see how the small signal voltage gain, what is the actual values that we just kind of get through the equations. So if we have the small signal current gain is 100, so we are dealing with the same circuit that we were dealing with in the previous picture. Now the small signal model and the AC part. So as you can see, the current gain in the AC is the same as what it was for DC. So we don't have any difference between the DC current gain and the AC current gain. As I mentioned, it can differ when we go to higher frequencies and so on, but in most cases we can consider them as equal. And then it's now given this output admittance value as well for this transistor, which is now 100 microsiemens. So we already built this equivalent circuit, which is again given here. So we have this RB resistor, 910 kilo ohm. We have the RC, 4.7 kilo ohm. Now it's given this HFE and HOE terms as well. So first we need to find out what are the GM and IE from the earlier example. So we can estimate that the emitter current is roughly the same as the collector current, so 1.02 milliamps. In reality, it's 1.0302 milliamps. So it's we make a 1% error in this estimation or approximation, but that's not the big error considering. So as given from the earlier, we can get from the transconductance, which was simply the 40 times the emitter current. So this 40 time, the 40 value of 40 here is this term 1 over KT. So it comes from the, I say it again, but it comes from the fact that we have the diode equation in the background, and the differentiate that we have the exponential function where we have the term of 1 over KT. And that 1 over KT is about 40 in room temperature. So that where this comes from. Okay, so we get the value for GM, and then we can again from the previous the input resistance is given that it's HFE times the 1 over GM. So we get the input resistance is about 2.4 kilo. Okay. And from the previous treatment, the voltage gain was given that it's minus GM times RC over HOE RC plus one. So when we plug everything in, all the values that we just were given, so now we have this HOE here. Here we get that the voltage gain is minus 183. But if we would not know this HOE, or we assume that the HOE is very very small value, then we can if we use the estimate simply by this GMRC, then we have minus 192. So there is not that big difference between these two values. So it's only like 10% or less than 10% inaccuracy if you do this approximation. So in most cases, that is enough. They have that accuracy is enough for the application. Then the input resistance is simply the parallel configuration of RB, which is the 910 kilo ohm, and then this HIE that we just determined. So if we now think that 900 kilo ohm and versus 2.4 kilo ohm, then the input is basically the same as the transistor input resistance. So the RB doesn't play a role for the amplifier input resistance. And then the output resistance is also, there is this RC in parallel with this 1 over HOE resistor. So if we put this 1 over HOE, we get 100 kilo ohm, and we had the RC was 4.7 kilo ohm. Then the parallel configuration gives us 4.5 kilo ohm, which is very close to actual RC. So you can see already here that this HOE term or 1 over HOE term is quite negligible in both for the output resistance and both also for the voltage gain. So typically you don't have to worry about that too much. But obviously if you would start increasing this, the RC value, so basically what you are doing is that you would start increasing the gain. So you would like to increase the gain more and more and more, then you would start increasing the output resistance. As you remember that for an amplifier, the output resistance is usually preferred to be as low as possible, because then depending on where you are like plugging in that output voltage, then if you have an output resistor which is or impedance is high, then the next stage input resistance needs to be high as well, otherwise you will start attenuating your signal. So that is something that you need to take into account, that you cannot put just a really high number here, because then you will start having high output resistance. And also here it might, you at some point this is starts to be a problem as well, because you have this RC value here and here, so basically you kind of there's a saturation limit that you at some point it doesn't matter anymore, because if you consider how this thing works, that if this HOE times RC gets much larger than one, then you take these RC values away, and then it's basically just determined by the transistor and not the external resistor anymore. So there's this kind of limits that you need to take into account, that it's not like doesn't hold all the time these approximations for this or this. Okay, so the large signal considering, so the operating point considerations, the same way that we have had it for field effect transistors. So where we are in this coordinates of voltage and current. So again, same way that we had for field effect transistors, we can think about this the combination of the load line and the characteristic curves of the transistor. So now we have both here in this picture. So we have these characteristics curves for different values of base current. We have different like curves for collector current versus collector emitter voltage. So we have this saturation region at the beginning when we start increasing the collector emitter voltage, which is highly nonlinear behavior. Then we have the active region at higher voltages, where the collector current is mainly dependent on the base current. There's some slope because of the collector emitter voltage, so it's not like always, it's not independent of collector emitter voltage, but it's quite close. It's strongly independent on the slow strongly dependent on the base current than the collector emitter voltage. Then the load line is from the collector side, so this should be the RC here actually. So if you now think that if we would just consider the VCC voltage source and the RC resistor as a Thevenin's equivalent circuit, and we wouldn't, as a, in a general case, we would be able to plug in any device there, linear, nonlinear, whatever. We would have this kind of behavior that if there is no current flowing through that any given device, we would have the voltage across that device would be VCC. And if there would be, excuse me, if we would have the kind of the short circuit, if we would short circuit that part of the circuit, is then this load line would hit somewhere here, and the current would be VCC divided by RC. And then when we just that part of the circuit is linear, so we can just simply draw a load line here, and this load line determines that kind of limits the possible current and voltage pairs in this space. So now we should bias the device so that we are somewhere in this active region, so that we select from the base side, we select it so that we are somewhere in a proper base current value, and also the so that we are at a certain VCE value here. So we are somewhere in the center here. It's the same idea what we had for the field effect transistors. And the choice of operating point is practically similar or same what we have had for field effect transistors. We have the saturation region here in the beginning the A region is something that you want to avoid, because that would be problematic if you have the amplifier operating here, because then you don't, basically if you would be at this point, for example, then the current is, the output current or the collector current is not, doesn't change much or at all, even though the input current, the base current would change. So basically you don't have any difference between, especially if you would increase the base current, you would not increase the collector current at all. Decreasing, you would decrease it, but then you would have really asymmetric signal. So if you are putting in a sinusoidal signal, you would get only rectified signal, and even the that part that gets out is not would not be just a half wave rectified. It would be somehow skewed quite strongly, and of course you would like to have good sinusoidal signal out as well. Then you have the B region, which is the maximum collector current that is given for the device. So it's given by the manufacturer. So it's there is a certain maximum that this transistor can take. So you need to stay away from that region as well. So if you look at the data sheets of a given transistor, you will find the B region. You will find the C region, which is the maximum collector emitter voltage. So again, you cannot go higher and higher voltage in the collector emitter voltage, because then you have higher and higher electric fields within that transistor, and it will break at some point. There will be some avalanche effects or something, and it will break. So both of these you can find from the datasheet quite easily. Same way you can find the D region, which is the maximum power. So, which is simply the collector current times the collector emitter voltage. So, and it's this 1 over x type of curve that sets the limit in the corner, right top corner. So you should stay somewhere in this wide area. Obviously, you don't want to go too close to this zero current region, because then, of course, you would have this asymmetric behavior of the signal. So you would be rectifying the signal, and it would not be that well behaving. And moreover, usually you would like to. We will talk about the power amplifiers and power amplification. Usually, you would like to optimize and maximize the power of the amplifier. So you would like to be as close as possible to this maximum power, but you cannot go in this D region. But you are kind of in this limit here. Then you get the maximum power out of your circuit by being there. So basically the load line should kind of touch or be very close to this, but not going into this region. So it would be kind of touching this part, but always being on the wide side of this picture. But for the illustration and for clarity, we kind of examples that we show here is just that we have the load line, so that we are clearly on the wide region of this operating area. So again, very similar treatment or idea what we had for the field effect transistors. We have this input signal VPE, we have a sinusoidal some frequency coming in. That means that we change between these points or these curves here. So VPE means that we have some base current. which then in turn means that we have some collector current, because the relationship between base and collector currents were just they were linearly proportional. So we have this beta value that gives us the collector current, and then what it means that the collector current then means that we basically mirror that current into voltage because of the RC resistor. Because the RC resistor makes there's a voltage drop from the VCC, and it gives us the output voltage, which is now given as VCE. And it means that with the higher the voltage, higher the current, collector current, then we have lower the output voltage, because we are inverting the signal. That's the configuration in this circuit. And here it's just like illustration of what happens if you put too high signals in. So if you put input waveform can be nice and clean sinusoidal signal, but if the amplitude is too high, so if the operating point is somewhere over here, but then you put too high amplitude, so it goes and hits the wall here, so it clips, so it cannot go higher than VCC. And on the other side, it hits this saturation region and also hits the wall. It doesn't go to zero, but it there's a certain value depending on where on this so what is the slope of the load line. So it will be clipped from both sides. So VCC and then the saturation volts, which is typically in the order of 0.2 volts, 0.3 volts, roughly. But obviously, this would be something that you would like to avoid in typical amplifier applications. Then some things about the device variability on the amplifier characteristics. So if we now think that, as I mentioned many times, the devices, the semiconductor active devices, the characteristics can vary quite a lot. So what can vary in these bipolar transistors? Basically, all the characteristics can vary, but what varies usually the most is the current gain. So you can have the typical or the nominal current gain is in the order of 100, 150 or so. But then the manufacturer gives, again, like for all the devices, it gives some kind of minimum and maximum limits that they have found out in the process and in their own analysis, that when they take thousands of devices and they measure these current gains, they get it's a distribution. So they have the kind of the average value, and then they have minimum and maximum. And it can vary a factor of two or more from minimum to maximum. So in case of the previous example, so if you would have a current gain of 80, that would make the quiescent collector current 0.82 milliamps. And it would in turn it would make the biasing point, the quiescent output voltage, so the VCE voltage would be 6.2 volts, and the voltage gain would be minus 147. And then we already made the analysis that we made in the previous slides was using current gain of 100, and so 1 milliamp roughly for collector current. Collector emitter voltage was 5.2 and the voltage gain was 183 minus. But then if we have a current gain of 150, then the numbers would change again. So quiescent collector current would be 50% higher. The output voltage would be almost 50% lower. And then the voltage gain would be again higher, quite a lot. And then if you would double the current gain, the quiescent collector current would be double and the quiescent output voltage would be really small, so 0.4 volts. It would have a high voltage gain, so double the voltage gain, but then the problem would be that the output voltage would be only 0.4 volts, which is very close to this nonlinear saturation region. So it would pose problems using this. So even small voltage in, it would kind of, the voltage gain would say that, okay, we have high output voltage, but the thing is that we are so close to that region that this analysis is not applicable, then it won't be exactly as expected. So we are hitting the wall in the saturation side. So it's it would be a problem that it's no longer a linear amplifier, but something else. Okay, kind of similar way what we had for field effect transistors, we can again use the feedback, and it's basically the same way that we used the feedback for the field effect transistor. So now we add a resistor in the emitter, which basically makes the same kind of feedback and stabilizes the output voltage and the biasing point, the current, as we had for the MOSFETs. So we can do it simply by using this single RB resistor from the on the base side, or more typically, this kind of voltage division circuit on the base side is used. So we have this R1, R2 from the base side. That kind of, again, it makes the same kind of effect for the base current, that we have some small base current flowing through depending on the values of R1, R2, and of course the supply voltage. And we will look into this, how this thing works. And the voltage, so this resistor, this RE resistor that was introduced in this circuit is now that if the voltage across is obviously proportional to the emitter current, which is almost exactly equal to the collector current. Because we only have the emitter current is IB plus IC, and IB is much smaller than IC, so we can make that assumption. And the input voltage, so the VBE voltage is applied to the base, in this case, the input voltage is the base voltage, because VBE is now, because we have this voltage drop in the resistor at the emitter, the emitter is not at zero, so the input voltage is now the base voltage. So basically now we have the feedback that the emitter voltage across the emitter resistor is effectively subtracted from the input in order to produce the applied the voltage, so the VBE voltage, in order to get the base current and then the collector current. So we have the negative feedback from there, from that side. So we have the negative feedback. So effectively what it does is it stabilizes again, as usually the negative feedback, it stabilizes the voltage gain and makes the variations in the device, so the current gain of the device, less dominant to the output characteristics or the transfer characteristics. So now we have two resistors to provide the bias. So we have not only the RC, but also RE. So we have the stabilization of the DC operating point rather than that, or now it's realized the DC operating point is determined mainly the with the out the external resistors and not anymore it's not anymore dependent on the characteristics of the device itself, so the transistor itself. So let's go through the analysis of this kind of circuit. So the DC example or DC analysis. So collector current, resistor 2.2 kilo ohm, emitter resistor 1 kilo ohm. Then on the base side, R1 27 and R2 10 kilo ohm. And again, we have a supply voltage of 10. So we have, again, we have AC coupled amplifier. So the input, the DC of the input signal doesn't propagate to the amplifier. So we can, from the DC point of view, we can kind of forget whatever there is on the input side. Okay, so first we need to figure out what is the base current or the base side, how that works. So basically the first approximation is simply assuming that the base current is small. So if we now just forget that what's the base current, so it's so small that it doesn't affect the voltage division and so on. So we can simply make an assumption that the base voltage, so what is the potential at the base, is simply from the voltage division from VCC using this R1 and R2. So it gives us roughly 2.7 volts at the base. And then we can assume that this voltage is high enough that the PN junction, so base to emitter PN junction, is at the forward bias mode. So it's high enough that we are on the diode equation. We are at, so that there is enough current flowing. So we have this threshold voltage of 0.7 volt. So again, we are assuming this. So this means that we know the base voltage. We know that, okay, base to emitter voltage is 0.7 volts. That means that assuming that everything is correct, we have at the emitter, we have 2 volts. Then we can calculate already because we know the RE, we know the VE from here. We can get that the emitter current is about 2 milliamps. And now we are making the assumption that the beta value or the current gain of this device is high. So if it's 100, then we can make this assumption quite easily. So the collector current is roughly emitter current, so 2 milliamps. So it would give us the quiescent output voltage, which is in this case is the collector voltage, which then can be calculated from the supply voltage VCC minus collector resistor times collector current, about 5.6 volts. So this is now the kind of where we are at with this very simple assumptions that we assume that the base current is so small that we don't have to worry about it in this case for base voltage. And then we assume collector and emitter currents are very quite close to together. So if you would like to make more detailed analysis, of this. Then we would need to go and make a Thevenin's equivalent circuit on the base side and take into account the base current, the base to emitter voltage again, and then the actual emitter current as well. So from the base side, we would have this VPB, which is now the we would take the R1, R2, and the supply out of on its own. And first thing that okay, we make that into Thevenin's equivalent circuit and then plug it into the base of the transistor. So for the Thevenin's equivalent circuit, this VBB is simply R2 divided by R1 plus R2 times VCC. And then this RBB is the Thevenin's equivalent circuit's resistor, which in this kind of configuration, it's simply the parallel configuration of R1 and R2. So it gives 7.3 kilo ohm. And now, to be more precise, we can say that the IE is beta times beta plus one IB. So this is more correct way of saying what is IB. So now, if we now plug everything in, we get IE. So again, we are assuming this VPE is 0.7 volts. But now we have RBB here and RE, everything is known. And then if we have a certain different like distribution of current gain values for this transistor, we can see that if we have beta of 80, we are at 1.83. And if we are at 350, the current is 1.96. So there, it doesn't, even though the there is like factor of 4 almost in the beta, there still the emitter current doesn't change that much. So there's like just like a 10% difference. Moreover, the output voltage changes from 5.7 to 6 volts throughout the whole range of different betas. So now, with this RE emitter resistor, the biasing point of this circuit is very stable. So the beta value can change quite a lot, and still the output voltage, the DC level, is very close there where so what wherever you start from, it doesn't change that much. So that's kind of the good of this emitter resistor. Okay, I will stop here and we will continue from here next time. So, is there any questions? If not, then I will conclude from this and we will continue on Wednesday. So, thank you.